knew there were opportunities in North Dakota, but I didn't. I appreciate that, Wayne, more than I can say. And really more than I can tell. President Ford, that is. My daughter Robin just graduated from VPI in Blacksburg, Virginia, and my wife Elizabeth is a member of the Board of Trustees at Duke and graduated from Harvard. And if I'm elected, I'm going to go to school, so I'm very, very pleased to be here and pleased to have this opportunity. This is my first speech before a university audience, and when I saw all the people there, I said, boy, we must really have a great following here, but I was reminded outside. It's a good way to cut class, and and I was supposed to ask the president if we could arrange that so it wouldn't cost you anything. I don't know what they do now, but when we were in school, many of us spent more time out of school than we did in school. It was some arrangement we had, and our grades reflected that, but for whatever reason you may be here, we're very pleased to be here. This is, as I said, my first opportunity to visit with students and, of course, some from Grand Forks who are non-students, some who may be at the wrong meeting, and others who are just standing by. I'm very proud to be a Republican. I'm very proud to be on the ticket with President Ford. I'm very happy to discuss for a few moments, and I know you don't want any long-winded speeches, and I keep trying to remember that I'm not Hubert Humphrey as I stand before an audience. Hubert and I are very good friends, and we visit a lot. In fact, just last week, he stopped me in the hall, and I said hello, and about an hour later, I said goodbye. Very interesting. I learned a lot. But he is a good man. I don't mean that in any personal way. And we do a lot of work together. And even now and then, we vote together. Not as often as we work together. We're going to be watching in the next couple of days some very critical debates by President Ford and Governor Carter. I think the debates themselves, at least the first one, could well start a trend toward November. We're not very far from November in any event. And so I would hope and I would guess that students, more than any other group, are going to be listening to what President Ford says and listening to what Governor Carter says so that you can make a judgment. And I hope you make that judgment. Now, I have a preference, but I'm not trying to dictate what that preference may be. I'm just suggesting that everyone in this audience, whether you're for Carter or for Ford, or undecided, or not interested, that you take a look, watch and listen, otherwise read about the debates, because it would be a tragedy in America if in this, our bicentennial year, less than half the people in America who are eligible to vote fail to go to the polls. And that's one of the real possibilities in 1976. American people, young Americans, old Americans, black Americans, you name it, are turned off by politics to some degree, and it's our responsibility, and I think the responsibility of everyone here, to see what the problems are and try to turn it around. Perhaps it's the candidates. Perhaps it's the two-party system. It may be the way the news comes to this group or any other group, the way it's reported. It may be our organization. Maybe we've overlooked some of the major factors and we sometimes fail. It may be how we're perceived, and that's really what it's about many, many times. How is this candidate perceived? How is that candidate perceived? And how is this party or that party perceived in the eyes and the minds of the voters? Many people have asked me, and more people are asking each day, how I was selected to be on the ticket. Maybe every time I talk, make more people wonder why I was selected. And I go back to Kansas City on August the 19th. When we heard early that morning it was down to four, President Ford would make his choice, and they would, whoever was chosen would appear with the president at 12 o'clock in Kansas City for a joint press conference. One of the names was Ann Armstrong. I knew at the time she was in Scotland and couldn't possibly get back by noon. So that left it three if this report was accurate. Another was Bill Ruckelshaus, an outstanding Republican from the state of Indiana, but he was up in Tacoma, Washington. And besides, his name was pretty long for a button, so I sort of thought maybe it wasn't going to be him. And that left Senator Baker and Senator Dole, and I told my wife, Elizabeth, I said, well, if they don't go in alphabetical order, I may have a chance. And so as the morning wore on, we were right next to the suite occupied by Governor Conley, I think on the 17th floor, as I remember. The press started to gather, and there was a lot of commotion in the hall and a lot of conversation. And I said to Elizabeth, I said, why don't you go over and put your ear to the door and see what's going on out there in the hallway? Legal in Kansas City if you listen from the inside out. It's only if you do it the other way that you may have some problems. So she heard my name mentioned. And shortly after that, I decided I better shave and take a shower and get ready just in case either I could be called or I could be dressed, and or both. And so the phone rang, and President Ford said, how are you? And I said, I'm nervous. But I recalling, I remember that I did accept before I identified myself, thinking he might have gotten the wrong number since Conley was right next door. So that's how it started, sort of started. And then we went to Russell, Kansas, our first campaign stop. The president insisted I might say over some staff objections that he started his campaign somewhere in the heartland of America, somewhere in rural America, and I couldn't think of a better place than my hometown in Russell, Kansas, particularly since he was on the way to Vail, Colorado, and had to pass directly over Russell. Most people do pass directly over Russell. But we landed in Salina, Kansas, and drove to Russell, and we had a great day. And I remember some of the staff saying that, well, this was on Thursday. We were going to be there on Friday, the next day. And the staff was saying to the president, he said, Mr. President, people in Russell have already made plans for Friday. And I told the president I thought Fridays normally would be pretty good days for presidents and vice presidential candidates, and most of the important plans in Russell could probably be changed. And we were able to do that. We did go to Russell. We had a great meeting. But my point is this. As far as I was concerned, that started the campaign. And we started that campaign in the heartland of America. That's where I'm from. That's essentially where President Ford is from. Let me make it, well, I won't say it perfectly clear. That term is no longer operative, but let me make it very clear. I'm not suggesting in any sense of the word or any stretch of the imagination that because I'm from Kansas and you're from North Dakota that somehow we're neighbors and you ought to vote for the Ford Dole ticket for that reason. That's what Mr. Carter keeps telling everybody in the South. I'm your neighbor. I'm your neighbor. Well, Elizabeth can say that the same way. But she can't. She lost her voice. I want to talk to you about a philosophy. I want to be your vice president because I think I have the experience and I'm qualified. Not because I live somewhere near North Dakota or because some here may know something about Kansas more than know about Georgia. And that's what it's all about. It's not where we're from. It's how we think and what experience we've had. And I know there's some here concerned about agriculture. Some probably are not, but I would guess many are. I'm not going to dwell on that, but I'm going to say this. I've been in the Congress 16 years. 8 of those years, I was on the House Committee on Agriculture. 8 of those years, I was On the Senate Agriculture Committee, I see a sign, peanuts, not pineapples. Let me tell you a story about that. In addition to pineapple juice being better for you, it won't stick to the roof of your mouth. But geographically, it's not really all that important. I think the perennial question right now is the economy, the state of the economy, the state of the farm economy, the state of the economy everywhere, unemployment, inflation. What has President Ford done about it? What will he do about it in the future? And I think in simplest terms, it's how much the federal bureaucracy can manage the economy, can determine priorities and wages and prices. On the other hand, to what degree we must leave decisions to the people, where I think they can be made more appropriately. And I want to go just for a second on the question of grain embargoes, because that's important in my state, it's important in your state, it's become a symbol across rural America of some unrest, and some disturbance, and a great deal of interest. Now, President Ford has imposed embargoes. The most recent one, I said I thought it was a mistake. In fact, when that was imposed, I was to travel to Kansas that weekend with the president. I didn't go. Not because I wanted to insult the president of the United States, because we're good friends. Because I wanted someone down the line to get the message that it was not a good policy. But at the time the embargo was imposed, you must consider the other facts. There were great pressures from the longshoremen. They refused to load the ships. They wanted a higher shipping subsidy, and George Meany got into the act. And a great many other things happened, and the wheat was piling up, and the president said, let's just hold off sales and see what happens. And, of course, the ultimate thing that happened was a long-term agreement with Russia, which I think provides some hope for farmer, some stability in the right sense for farm exports. President Ford, whether rightly or wrongly, in my opinion, the embargo was imposed, and prices, whether related to that or not related to that, have gone down. The important thing to remember is that our exports are up under this administration, almost double, and in some cases double they were under the 8 years of Secretary Freeman and Democrat administrations. But just as important is how Mr. Carter stands on the question of embargoes. You're in agriculture, you ought to be concerned, because he's talking about your future and your income. I think the best evidence is in the Reader's Digest you'll get that arrived yesterday. It's this month's Reader's Digest. And in that Reader's Digest, Governor Carter says that one of the causes for inflation was an excessive sale. Now, these are Carter's words, not Bob Dole's, not the fellow back there holding it. An excessive sale of American wheat to Russians. He blames inflation, says the cause of inflation, one of the main causes of inflation, is selling wheat to Russia. This is the same man who went to the Des Moines Fair, the Iowa State Fair, and said to a group of farmers, thousands of farmers, I understand, if you vote for Carter, there'll be no more embargoes. And as he left the podium and walked back to his car, wherever he was going, he was asked by a reporter of the Des Moines Register, do you really mean that? And he said, well, I guess not. I guess in some cases you might have to have embargoes. Then if you read the Democrat platform, you'll find references there to restraining sales, inflationary sales of food and grains. So I just suggest
Maybe we've learned our lesson. Embargoes are going to be a thing of the past in the Ford Dole administration unless there's some dire emergency. But based on the most recent statement by Governor Carter in Reader's Digest, coupled with the statements in the platform, plus he said that he would use food as a weapon if we had any trouble with the OPEC countries, I think the farmers can take very little heart from that statement. And I want to move to taxes because many in this group are going to be graduating. The median income for college students graduating is about $19,000 a year. That's not a great deal of money. It's probably more than you're making now. But the median income for students is about $19,000 a year. Now, about 3 days ago, Mr. Carter was interviewed, and that interview was released. He said in that interview, in effect, that he was going to raise the taxes for everybody above the median income. And the median income in America is $14,000 per family. That's a husband and wife or anyone else in the family working. The median income, the halfway point, is some $14,000. And I suggest that students ought to take a look at that, because you're going to be voting or not voting in about 6 weeks. Now, Mr. Carter's programs are going to cost, according to a study released in the House of Representatives by Congressman Barbara Conable, by 1980, if we implemented every program suggested by Governor Carter in the platform, it would be costing about $700 billion annually. And it's this generation going to have to pay for those programs, or half those programs, or a fourth of those programs. I don't suggest we shouldn't have programs. It's just we ought to tell the American people how we're going to pay for the programs. Well, apparently he has. He's suggesting increased taxes. Increased taxes on everyone above the median income. And it doesn't do much good for Senator Mondale up in Maine yesterday to say, well, he meant $50,000. He's only going to raise taxes on the rich. Well, I've been in politics long enough to know that it's always nice to attack the rich. That's always the guy that has more money than you have. But he didn't say the rich. And Mr. Mondale knows he didn't say the rich. He said anybody who had above that median income, and that's $14,000 per family. And I say to the students, you've got a stake in the future. In fact, it's yours. Let me point up one other thing. There's been a lot of talk about unemployment, and it's bad. It's too high. But I don't get much comfort out of Mr. Carter citing the last figures under their administrations when we had 500,000 young Americans in South Vietnam and Southeast Asia. That's not the way to hold down unemployment, and that's not what we have in mind. Young Americans feel, but I have a very strong feeling about the defense of this country. Not because I know I'm in an area where you have a SAC base either. I'd say it if I was in Kansas where they about to close one near there. If we're going to have peace in this world, in your generation and your children's generations, we've got to be strong. Doesn't mean we have to waste billions and billions of dollars, but we've got to be strong. Now, for the first time, the president signing the defense authorization or appropriations bill today, for the first time, we have some real growth in the defense budget, nearly $11 billion. And that increase is due to the credit goes to President Ford for his efforts to persuade the Congress, by very close votes, I might add, to give us an increase in defense expenditures, not to waste money, not to help the Pentagon, but to be able to deal from strength for peace. And that's what it's all about. I don't think we can sit down with the Russians or anyone else in this world if we're number two and talk about peace, because then we're talking from weakness, We're dealing from weakness rather than strength. And I've got to believe that the future of this country is sound. And the future of this country and the world is peaceful if we have a strong defense. And if we have someone in the White House, a president of the United States who's had the experience, and President Ford has had that experience. He was on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee in the House for 20 years. He's been the vice president. He's been the president. He understands foreign policy. He understands the need for strength and stability. And I can't think of any more important issue in this campaign. When Mr. Carter suggests cutting $5 to $7 billion in defense, 2 years ago he was saying $15 billion in defense. And that may sound great. I'm going to put all that money in, quote, social programs. Right on. I'm all for social programs, but I would like to be around to see some of the beneficiaries, too. And probably an area that may not be as popular with college students, but I think deserves some attention. And that's the issue of amnesty. I went to Seattle, Washington, after Governor Carter addressed the American Legion there. And he stood up and told the American Legion that he was against general amnesty, but he was for general pardon. Well, I got out my dictionary, and it said they were the same thing, so I was confused. It says general amnesty means general pardon. Now, he was talking about a general pardon for draft evaders and draft resistors, not deserters. And I said the next day the Ford Dole administration would not be for blanket amnesty, blanket pardon, or blanket clemency. And I say also, we're going to have to deal with that one of these days. I think we have our priorities mixed up again. We still have hundreds of patriotic, God-fearing Americans who are missing in action in Southeast Asia. And if we have any priority in this country, it ought to be directed toward those forgotten Americans rather than those who forgot America in a time of need. And let me touch briefly on estate taxes, because your parents, some work all their lives, they end up having, when they pass on or their parents pass on, you've had to sell the farm to stay on the farm, or half of it, because of the high estate taxes. And this has been an initiative of President Ford, and Congress did finally act, and you're finally going to get some relief. It's going to be phased in, but we are going to increase that exemption to around $175,000. And we're going to value the land not as its potential for some shopping center, but as its farm use value, and that's the Dole Amendment in that piece of legislation. Why should we value farmland? If you live near a city, say, well, we ought to assess this land and value this land based on its potential. Well, I know farmers living next to center to cities who don't want to do anything but farm that land. They're not concerned about motels or hotels or shopping centers. But we finally have some relief. And then we have the question of grain inspection, which I think is important. And I can only say on that that I've been working, yes, with Senator Humphrey and Senator Clark and other Republicans and those Democrats on both sides, the House and the Senate. Right now we're at an impasse, because of a very strong difference of opinion among House members and senators. They're meeting today at 1:30 again, and I hope we can have some resolution. Because nothing is more distressing to the American producer to witness and to watch the fraud and the scandal been going on in that administration. But again, the result is not legislation that must be totally federalized, as some have suggested in the Congress. That's always the answer of some. Well, turn it over to the federal government. Turn it over to the federal government. And we've done too much of that now. We've about turned the country over to the federal government. Look at the shape it's in some areas because of it. It's time we gave it back to the American people. And as in Kansas, I know and I understand that you have a large American Indian population in the great state of North Dakota. I can only say I think they've heard all the promises from politicians. They don't want any more promises. They want somebody to work with them. And I pledge to do that. And I pledge if we can't find the answers, we'll come to them and not go to some bureaucracy to find any answers that are non-existent for the most part. We'll find the best answers to their problems with them. And I think that's more than the other side can promise or say. So let me conclude as I started. It's a very important year. Every election year is important from the standpoint of candidates. We may be selfish. We may be all those things that people write and say about us, but I don't really think so. I think President Ford, as someone said 2 weeks ago, whether he wins or loses, he will leave the presidency as he came in, open, candid, honest, decent, a good family man, and a man the American people have trust in. Oh, maybe not the most charismatic speaker, not the most articulate person in American politics, but does that make a good president? But you can trust President Ford. He doesn't give you three positions on every issue as Mr. Carter does. And the reason they're having three debates is to accommodate Governor Carter's three positions on each issue. And I want to point out to this audience the coziness that Carter and Mondale have to labor leaders like George Meany. Somebody asked George Meany why he didn't run for president. He said, why step down? Why step down? He's got the Democrat Party pretty well under control. He's back in the fold. He didn't support George McGovern. So he's supporting someone just as liberal, just as far out, because he can control this candidate. He couldn't control George McGovern to McGovern's credit. And someone said, how can you tell Bob Dole from Walter Mondale? Well, my answer is, he'll be with George Meany. And I'll try to be with the people. And I think it's very important to take a look at who's supporting who in this campaign. Very important to take a look at our positions and our stands. And I'll only say this. You may not agree with us every time, but you're only going to get one answer. Now, Carter said he likes to shade his opinions from time to time to accommodate the views of the audience. Now, is that what students want or anybody else wants in America? Somebody to walk into this audience knowing in advance what you want to hear and to fuzz it up a little bit and lay it out there and say, well, I've conned that group. Let's go on to the next meeting. I don't think so. We need some straight talk. We need a president who has the leadership ability, the capability, the potential, and who's demonstrated that. When you add up the experience, President Ford wins hands down. And so I just ask you to take a look at the record. We'll take our chances. And for the first time in many, many years, young voters are turning to President Ford in greater, greater numbers than any other Republican candidate for a long, long time. Because they believe and they trust and they know and they perceive President Ford as an honest, decent American. We need your help. Thank you very much.